Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Jesse Billington, for about the 14th time of trying, because this recording has, let's say, struggled to get off to a start. We've been trying for nearly an hour now to actually get a recording to work, and we've sort of found a hokum way of doing this. But anyway, we're back finally to preview the 17th round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined once again by my co-host, Mr. Timo Albus Daly. Tech problems aside, how are you?
I'm hoping that the tech problems are a sign of things to come for this weekend, and it's as suitably chaotic in Baku for the Formula 1 and the Formula 2 as it has been for us, and that we get all these kind of red flag and yellow flag incidents to really spice things up. I'm good otherwise. How are you?
I'm finally dry. I'm still very tired and stiff after spending 3 days on my feet running around the Goodwood Revival, producing live coverage of that. But it was proof that you can go motor racing in the rain. We obviously had historic and classic Formula One cars out and about on track. Huge amounts of spray. Visibility was very bad, but drivers giving it their absolute all. We had huge amounts of overtakes. We had a guy come from fourth to take the win in the Richmond and Gordon Trophy. It was bonkers and brilliant, and proof that you can do motor racing in the rain, and as you can at Silverstone as well, it seems.
Yeah, the European Le Mans Series went there last weekend. Jamie Chadwick being the home hero there, getting on the top step of the podium. She's got a real run for the title this year. It's going to be nip and tuck as we head into these final stage of the season, and as well for the Alcobaze sisters in the junior category. They were on the podium again this weekend, so there's about a point separating them, I think, between third place and themselves at the moment, so not a massive gulf up to second and first two, so could be a good year for that trio, for that former kind of F1 Academy W Series alumni.
Very good news indeed. Speaking of trying to sort out technical issues and hurdles when it comes to over-the-air communication, we'll jump into our news section and the fact that Cadillac simulated the Monza Grand Prix. We're going back to the Italian Grand Prix from a few weekends ago, and using 50 staff members across the UK and USA, they basically played pretend through the Grand Prix, including driver media duties, so the team is sort of aware of their roles and used it as a chance to test their communication systems between the UK and their US bases. Which, considering you and I are only really trying to cover the distance between sort of central Bedfordshire and somewhere in Ireland, and still running into issues, it seems sensible that they checked between the UK and the US.
Yeah, I'm hoping for their sake that they maybe have slightly more technology and resources available to them as well, because otherwise if they're trying to do it as we're doing it, then it's not looking good for Cadillac next year. But good preparation for them to try and figure out what to do. And I've been saying a lot this year about how important the fundamentals are for Formula One teams and how that can often be forgotten, and it's nice to see that at a time where they can't do too much else because they're still very much building everything up, they're looking at this and going, let's just check that what we do have works and see if there's any obvious pitfalls that we're stumbling into and how do we fix those before we get to Australia, so that when we do get there, whatever problems we face, it's not going to be because we're all meeting each other for the first time or we don't know what shorthand for XYZ thing is from someone in the US telling someone in the UK who's telling us down in Oz. So hopefully that's a good sign of things going. We've no idea how they did or what success looks like for them, because we don't know if they were just running ghost cars, if they were kind of adding their own team in an F1 game in a simulator, or if they were just simply observing and going, well, if we were there in Ferrari's place, for example, we would do X or Y instead of what they're doing. Well, this is what we did, but what are they doing and reacting to it? Who knows?
We can assume they're using a bit more than essentially the basic version of Google Meet to try and organise things. But again, it's a case of if you sort of sweat the small stuff, everything else will fall into place. If you get the building blocks right early on, everything else should be sort of relatively straightforward for them, which is good news, which is sort of what we want to hear. It means they're going to arrive relatively competitive, at least on a functional sense.
Yeah, and one thing they can prepare for well in advance is the fact that Bottas has a five-place grid penalty for Australia after shenanigans with Kevin Magnussen in Abu Dhabi last year, so they can be running all the simulations possible, going, well, he's not wherever he qualifies, it's going to be five places back, so let's see if we can get a head start on that. I don't know how much of an advantage you can get from that, but you've got time on your hands. You might as well do something.
Yeah, it's worth giving them a shot. And that is a fun thing that they've got those grid penalties for Valtteri Bottas coming up. We'll see how they get on with those come Australia at the start of next year. We'll move on then to Formula E and the women's test, which has been confirmed for Valencia and Spain on Friday the 31st of October as part of the official pre-season test ahead of the 2025 and 2026 season. Each team must run at least one woman with the option to run a second. Bianca Bustamante has already been confirmed for this, while Abby Pulling with Nissan seems like a sure thing too.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see if we get some new names for this test or if it'll be pretty uniform to the last one. Either way, it's not really any negatives on that front because you're either giving new women an opportunity or you're keeping the stability from before and you're getting to build up a real image of what those drivers can do. The next thing will just be when you're putting one of them in a full-time seat, because that's where the next trigger has to be pulled. You think Abby Pulling, yeah, I don't think there's room at Nissan for next year from what I can recall from the driver market there, but I think she needs to go up to Formula 3. Roden have said that next year and 27 are her best opportunities. Why not stick her in next year? And Formula E can be a great way to help with single-seater preparation. It's obviously not a Formula 3 car, but drivers, you get in as many cars as possible because you can't really turn down the offer to get into any car because of the nature of the sport. And it just helps keep you in the loop with it all. So I'll be interested to hear how that turns out and who, if any of them, then maybe get a seat for next year.
I think it's really important that these girls are given their seat time, because seat time. When it comes to single seaters, there are a lot of similarities between the series. The way that obviously cars handle and behave is an important thing for them to get time experiencing. And the fact that Formula E is making these dedicated female only tests is very important and a practical aspect of what we want to see when it comes to offering these steps up the motorsports ladder for women and young girls. So this is important, and it'll be interesting to see what the full list is. We'll jump, I don't know which, the problem is we can sprint off in two ways from here. We've got Citroën entering Formula E replacing Maserati, but at the same time when we're talking about young women getting their chance in motorsport, we've got the F1 Academy rookie test, which is heading off also in Spain at Circuito de Navarra. And this has got 18 rookies tested out over 2 days. Again, it's equal machinery because it's a spec series. And the list of what they've got has been pulled from all over the world, from all different racing series with different backgrounds. And again, we've got this fantastic well of talent coming through. I think Citroën entering Formula E, replacing Maserati in the series, easy enough. I think we can move on from that. But F1 Academy, they've got this enormous rookie test, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I've got to say on the Citroën going in Formula E situation is I keep going on about how I'd love Peugeot and Citroën to take over Alpine and for them to give it a go. And this feels like I've made a hopeful prediction for F1. And then we get Pornstar's version instead, where they go, this is the best we can offer you. Take it. I'm like, damn, I'm going to have to for now. But the F1 rookie test, yeah, it's interesting that none were chosen from the more than equal kind of field of people that they've got there, because they've got a few drivers that they're developing. Or that they chose anyone from their own karting program, because that's they've got some older girls in there to keep an eye on. None of them have made it, as far as I'm aware, so that's interesting. And I also want to know what the criteria were that made these 18 stand out from others. And there is this focus on nurturing the next generation, and that's fine, and don't get me wrong, I like that idea of it. But it just brings back the curious notion of the aging out process. If you have two seasons, or you hit the age of 25 first. And there is much more of a focus on developing the younger generation now. And the likes of Lina Bula and Kerry Schreiner, those drivers that you kind of, that do exist out there, that maybe haven't, I don't want to say have to do it the hard way, because it's still not easy for the new lot, but the people that were there first, they're struggling to maybe get their opportunity in F1 Academy that could really help them. So it'd be fascinating to see how they do over these 2 days. They're all apparently eligible to get a seat next year in F1 Academy. Obviously not all of them will, but it'll be interesting to see how they were chosen, who chooses them for next year, which ones get F1 backing that maybe didn't have any before, and how that all peters out. It'd be absolutely fascinating. And yeah, there's a lot of good stuff here. I think going back slightly to the Formula E women's test, there's all this focus on preparation, and that's brilliant. Now we need to see a little bit of putting someone in a Formula E seat or a Formula 3 seat, because the old expression of if you wait until you're fully ready for something, you're never going to do it. You need to throw one of these, or two of them, or three of them, into a seat in one of or both of these categories soon, and to not only for the sake of their careers, but to show that you can get somewhere next. And these new rookies that we've got to be assessed, they'll benefit from that. You'll all benefit from it. So the sooner you figure it out, you figure out how this new Formula 3 and Formula 2 car have been redesigned to better suit drivers of all types, well, let's see, because we've just had blokes this far. We had testing with Sophia Flersch and Chloe Chambers and Tatiana Calderon. We haven't had a full season or even a single round like we got back in GP3 days, where you'd get people for a round or two or a whole season. Not had any of that since it became Formula 3. So that's the next bit now. But I like where the rookie test is going, and I like that we've got fresh names, because I was going through the list and I was like, I know two or three of these, but the majority of them I don't. And as I keep saying to you whenever we talk about F1 Academy, that's good. I like that, because as much as I like knowing who F1 is, you were kind of frustrated that it was these people keeping going from W Series into F1 Academy. Like, no, they need the next bit now. They need the next bit.
Yeah, it's no good having the names that are familiar and are therefore to sort of the layperson a bit more established in motorsport, because they are the ones that are more likely to get a seat anyway. Whereas when you pick the sort of the lesser known names, the ones that are coming up through the ranks as it is and having to sort of fight their way through the early stages as it stands, they're the ones that could really benefit from getting. I think Maya Virg put it well. She said that while the F1 Academy racing isn't great, what it does give you is exposure. And that's the important thing as a racing driver, is you need to have exposure, because a lot of it is marketing. It's being able to market yourself and being able to show what you can do. And yeah, F1 Academy gives you the opportunity to do that on a very big stage. And while Abby Pulling's now off in, I don't want to call it the doldrums of like GB3, but she's not in like the huge, well-broadcast on a main channel every weekend spotlight, but people still know who she is. People still follow her. Yeah, you've got to go looking for the series, but when you find it, you go, I know who that is though, because she's had that time in the spotlight. She's got that recognition. And that will follow you. Even when you go off to do something else, people still know who you are. And I think that's the important thing that F1 Academy achieves.
In Formula 3, because I think that's the thing, right? If when you look at football or basketball or something, when you follow a player in that case from the lower leagues, they get promoted to a top team. You don't stop following them suddenly and stop following the sport. You follow that player wherever they go because you're the fan of the player. It'd be the same thing for Formula 3. So then you get an increase in exposure that way. A whole new audience comes to Formula 3 that hasn't been there before, maybe hasn't been there since Sophia was there, because, oh, there's not a woman here, why would I watch it now, if that's the mentality being used. So I'm running out of reasons as to why there shouldn't be. I mean, I was never advocating that there should be anyway, but, you know, you're trying to think on the other side and go, well, why isn't there? I can't think
what hurdles have they got in the way that have sort of caused this?
Supposedly no more hurdles, according to the team principals, then why aren't you putting one in?
Yeah, because also I think everyone says it's sort of the marketing opportunity you have as a team to say, look, we've got a female driver on a grid of 22 to 30 drivers. Having one out of 22 or one out of 30 is huge. That's a hugely marketable thing, and I don't think that you should be able to just simply market a driver based off their gender. That's not exactly the end point we're aiming for, but as it stands,
we're going to use until we get there.
Until we've got something better, yeah, I think it's something that drivers should be able to lean into. When it comes to, obviously, we've mentioned drivers getting into Formula 2, Trident has replaced both of its drivers for the rest of the season. Max Esterson and Sami Megatunov have both parted ways with the team, and they'll be replaced by Martinius Stenshorn, who came 5th in Formula 3 this year, and Lorenz van Hopen, who came 12th. They will sit in for the final three rounds of the season. Trident, as it stands, are in last place with 2 points to their name. Elsewhere, Nikola Solov has signed with Campos in Formula 2 for 2026, currently Marty and Lindblad in their stable, which, given that there's been sort of mutterings about the fact that Hajar will next season be moving up to replace Yuki Tsunoda, suggests that RB seat is going to become free, and wouldn't be surprised if we see Lindblad make that move up.
Yeah, I can see, first of all, why Trident got rid of Esterson and Omega 2, and if I mean 2 points, I mean, even if the team isn't all there, 2 points is still not great when the next team up is 24. Stenshorn makes sort of sense to replace him. Van Hopen less so for me, but there we go. Given that they're dead last in the team standings and that neither driver will be probably in Formula 2 next year, maybe Stenshorn. But also the fact that there's only three rounds left, the choice again frustrated me, going back to what we were just talking about, because they had a chance to do something special here. Maybe Flersch, maybe Marta Garcia, someone like this who has been around for a few minutes and who knows what they're doing and is not a risk. But also, you can take the risk because you're dead last with 2 points. you're probably not winning every single race anyway, so you'll be hopeful to get a smattering of points. And even if you do win every race, you're still maybe moving up only a couple positions overall anyway. So why not take that risk? At the very least, as we said, you'd get some good publicity. So I can understand, but it's frustrating. I heard the news, and then I heard the news, and just that Rowan Atkinson again in the Mercedes garage is going, ah. But yeah, it's Red Bull with Solov and Campos and all this sorts of thing. It makes a lot of sense as well. But again, frustrating because I would have liked Iwasa to come in somewhere in there because he's been left out in the cold. It feels like just give him a year in either Racing Bulls or Red Bull. I don't mind where because I don't want Lindblad to be rushed. He's clearly talented, but I just get a bad feeling he's not as ready as he should be yet. Iwasa's in the top three in Super Formula at the moment, not a million miles away from the title. So, as Lawson proved, you can do all right in either if you're given more than two races, potentially. So, don't mind it, but it's interesting that Solov has already been signed for that team when both of those drivers, you'd argue, should stay next year. And I mean, the obvious solution is that they both stay, but one of them just moves teams. But it's interesting that they've already sorted that this early on and puts pressure on those two drivers to do well then, especially Marty, I think, because he's got to market himself with Campos and the rest of the Formula 2 group, whereas Lindblad, because of the talkings around him, it's not a case of he doesn't have to do well at all, but there's slightly less pressure on him because he's maybe already looking at that Racing Bull seat.
Also, when you look at how Marty did last year alongside Isaac Hadjar, they were teammates at the same time. I think they were both also, I think at the time, Marty was also a Red Bull Junior driver. And it was this sort of strange combination where you've got this sort of direct comparison between a guy that's in Formula 2 still and one that's in Formula 1 and somehow bagged a podium and is driving sort of astonishingly well in his rookie season. So you've got this sort of very interesting means of sort of measuring and sort of looking at some metrics between them. So it's a fascinating one to pick apart. And I mean, we're talking about sort of Iwasa being sort of left out in the cold for so long. Drugovic has just signed with Andretti for Formula E as well. So there's sort of this seat swapping and sort of those opportunities that are coming along eventually and they are opening up. It's just a case of when and where and for which drivers and how well they sort of push and market themselves for things. I think Drugovic eventually gave up waiting for that Aston Martin seat, realising it was never going to come.
I think Drugovic is playing the long game plan there, thinking if I can do well with Andretti in Formula E, maybe I can get a reserve driver role with their F1 team. And at least I'm not in any worse a situation than I was with Aston Martin. And I might actually get a chance at replacing one of these drivers.
Once the team is sort of set up with Bottas and Perez, they'll then swap in Herta and Drugovic as sort of their young talent for the seasons to come. But we'll see how that
we
goes.
We walk so you could run.
Yes, yeah, we use the old boys and all their knowledge for one thing and then simply replace you with the young blood. I don't really have a link to time to this one, but this is a very interesting one because this is Carlos Sainz's Zandvoort penalty has been overturned. And this is something we both agreed on, the fact that there shouldn't have been a penalty in the first place. And the incident with Lawson was reviewed and the penalty overturned and the points put on Sainz's licence removed because, of course, he received two super licence penalty points for that collision, which has obviously now been struck off. So I think this is good that the FIA and F1 are happy to go back and look at incidents. I don't like the fact that it's taken sort of nearly a month.
I was going to say, that's the only good bit about that, though, because they didn't see signs after the race, didn't see him before Italy, then did it after Italy, and it just is a whole showcase of how not to do it. And I think if they're undoing that, then they should take Behrmann's penalty from Monza away too, because if the incident with Lawson is seen as a racing incident, then the Behrmann Sainz thing should
be the Lawson Sainz one, yeah, or put onto Sainz.
Which would have been quite funny, like, we'll take your penalty away from Zandvoort and then apply a penalty to Monza. Because
the Lawson Sainz one was a racing incident all day long. The Sainz Behrmann one was a bit more pointed and certainly should have been a penalty for Sainz all day long. And I think that Nico Rosberg will agree with me on that one. We'll move on from Sainz's penalty to the calendar for 2026. And the sprint calendar has been released. We have got sprint races in China, Miami, Canada, Silverstone, Zandvoort and Singapore. There are some interesting ones there, especially when you look at the start time for what will be that Singapore sprint race. We're going to try and melt some Formula One drivers, it seems.
Yeah, I've summed all of these up pretty quickly. China, meh, after this year's one. It was nice to see Lewis in red winning, but there wasn't much else going on there. Miami, double meh. can't honestly remember anything that's happened in any of the sprint races there. Canada could be interesting. New circuit. Willing to give it a go. Silverstone didn't work in 2021. Don't think it's going to work now. Zandvoort, I'm already asleep. And Singapore, either really, really boring. Good.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be insane. It's kind of what we thought might happen in Baku when they got a sprint race. And then we got the former because everyone realised, yeah, we're not going to try and smash up our cars because we've got a Grand Prix tomorrow. The only kind of caveat to this is that the 2026 cars are going to be used. And it's the first time we'll have seen a new generation of cars. So with the differences and maybe reliability and all that sort of thing, could make them more interesting, but the bar is pretty low.
Yeah. Apparently they're looking to move from 6 to 10 sprint races in 2026, but I know Esteban Ocon has already come out and spoken about this, sort of essentially saying something along the lines of, let's not devalue the idea of going racing. The sort of the onus is on having the Grand Prix, and that is it. It is the big prize. It is that name for a reason. The sprint race sort of takes away from it. Not every session can be competitive and points based, and I think he has a point there. I think sort of control the means of production better.
Again, after a meeting that Domenicali has supposedly had where all these drivers were agreeing with him about wanting more sprint races, and you just immediately start hearing drivers come out going, no, I'm good with that. And Esteban's just the latest one going, no, I don't think so, actually.
It's a very interesting case when it comes to sort of drivers going, no, I don't think we said we wanted that. But anyway, we'll move on and see what comes of the sprint race calendar in 2027 when we potentially go up to 10. And our final news story is that John Elkann, the sort of leader CEO of Ferrari, is taking on community service. Together with his siblings, he has agreed to pay 183 million euros to close the case that was linked to the inheritance of their grandmother, Maria Caracciolo. The settlement ends a criminal investigation into alleged undeclared assets worth around 1 billion euros. Elkann will also complete 1 year of community service, though his lawyer stressed this does not imply guilt, which is the sort of thing your lawyer would probably say if you've clearly done something wrong and you're just sort of trying to make amends for it a bit.
One is most amused by this, and I thought we could do with a bit of a chuckling story to finish off the news with, because it's, I'm going to pay you a lot of money and do community service, but I'm not guilty in any way, shape or form.
I'm just doing this out of the goodness of my heart. There is nothing tied to this at all.
Nothing to see here.
Move along, nothing to see here. And that brings us nicely to the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. Timo, you have some fun facts for me.
I've got some questions for you, which are fun facts in themselves. So, I think for once, you might actually get one or two of these pretty quickly, mainly because we have history in Baku, but not a stupendous amount just yet. Who has the most wins in Baku?
Oh. It's either Lewis Hamilton or Valtteri Bottas.
Okay, this might take longer than I thought. It's Sergio Perez.
I suppose he's won there twice?
With two wins.
Wow. He was our first repeat winner at Baku. Wow.
First and only. To date.
That is impressive.
Who has the most podiums?
Valtteri Bottas.
Also Sergio Perez.
This guy loves Baku. This is why he's coming back.
See, he came third in 2016, third in 2018, he won in 2021, came second in 2022, and then won in 2023. So,
can't keep the man off the podium.
And so we've had seven different winners from eight Grand Prix. We had Rosberg, Ricciardo, Hamilton, Bottas, Perez, Verstappen, Perez again, and then Piastri. And then out of the possible 24 different drivers that we could have had in that entire time on the podium, how many different drivers have we had?
We've had Stroll up there. We've probably had Ricciardo up there. We've had a Leclerc up there. We've had Norris up there. I'm going to go with something ridiculous, like we've had 12 different drivers in total on the podium across the Grand Prix.
You will kick yourself. It is 13 different drivers.
Oh, God damn it. I was so close.
Rosberg, Vettel, Perez, Ricciardo, Bottas, Stroll, Hamilton, Raikkonen, Gasly, Verstappen, Russell, Leclerc,
Gasly,
and Piastri.
Forgot Gasly had done it. That was because he did that in the Toro Rosso as well, wasn't it? Because you had someone won it, and then you had Vettel in second, then you had Gasly in third, or something absurd.
It was
like
Perez,
that,
Vettel, and Gasly. It was 2021 when Mark Webber screamed like a little girl.
With like a little girl, because Hamilton went out and Verstappen had burst his tyre while wearing Liam Lawson's shoes. What a wild time.
The last truly chaotic Baku Grand Prix that we had, and something I hope we get this weekend.
I mean, I'd say that Carlos Sainz and Sergio Perez crashing into one another and Oscar Piastri and Charles Leclerc having an absolutely incredible ding-dong last season was pretty good as well. It was chaotic, race, but it was good racing.
Chaotic standards, yeah. It was closer to what we wanted, I'll give you that.
Yeah. It was top-quality racing. Certainly those overtakes between Piastri and Leclerc. Any more fun facts and questions?
No, that'll be enough to keep you busy until we head to Singapore.
Beautiful stuff. And speaking of Baku, obviously it's important to mention that the C6 tyre is back. We're going for the three softest compounds in the range, which obviously means a bit of degradation as well.
Bang.
Which tyre goes bang? Maybe. It's a very high speed circuit, certainly down that front straight. As soon as you get out of basically the tight left hander at the top of the circuit, it's flat all the way to turn one. It's a huge braking zone coming down into there. So we've got the C4, C5, C6 compounds, which the softest of the lot, which is going to be interesting, especially because we have not run the C6 at that circuit, so we have no idea what the stint length that it would do. It was sort of
watch
run
them not use it.
Yeah, it was barely used in 2024. It did, the soft tire did 1% of laps across the entire week Grand Prix or weekend last year, with 10% of stints being done. It was barely used. So it's going to be very interesting. It's a high traction circuit, medium stress, big braking though, very little lateral force though. We're not moving that tyre around on its carcass because all the corners are quite slow speed, and it's a relatively low downforce track as well. But track evolution is high and abrasion is low. So while the track will come to the drivers, It's not really going to be one that's stripping the compound away. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it goes. And the temperatures are all over the place on the track as well, because you've got some huge drops across the circuit. You can get some really hot bits where the sun just sits on it all day, and some shaded bits where it's a bit cooler. So a very interesting Grand Prix when it comes to the rubber indeed. With that in mind, should we have a quick look at the weather actually as well, because it could be interesting. Thank you, weather.
I'm just hoping that we get a repeat or the sequel to the Behrmann Antonelli fight from Formula 2 last year around the tight twisty section, because that was an excellent Formula 2 racing, and Behrmann putting his car in places it had no right being and making it work. So I'm not going to have a wild prediction, but I'd quite like to see that considering it's a Haas via Mercedes.
Well, given that he's teetering on the edge of a race ban, if he screws up during a practice session royally, Behrmann might not be taking place in the Grand Prix. Yeah, they simply swap them. Friday, 25 degrees and sunny. No real chance of rain. Saturday, variably cloudy with a bit of a shower, which could wash the track away. But again, like we said, it sort of rubbers in pretty quickly. And Sunday is set to be breezy in the morning, otherwise mostly cloudy, 21 degrees Celsius. So could be an interesting qualifying if we have some showers coming. It could be a bit like Brazil, where we have the one driver that goes out early on a dry compound tyre, bags in a good lap, and then we have the rain come down, which could give us a bit of a jumbled order going into a relatively standard
pole
Sunday.
Position, here we come.
Let's not rule it out, although I wouldn't be surprised if it's something absolutely absurd like a Gabriel Bortoletto pole position, because I can't wait to see the graphic for it. Someone in the F1 back office.
Put that down for your pole position prediction.
You know what? Screw it. I might. Gabriel Bortoletto. As we move into our predictions. We'll start with pole position. Bortoletto. So, Timo, your pole position prediction, please.
I'd really like Nico Hülkenberg just because of the Gabriel Bortoletto that you've got, but I'm going to go with Oscar Piastri just because it's Oscar Piastri. As we always say, the logic for Oscar Piastri just makes sense.
He is a safe pair of hands and a safe bet, and I've written now into the Word document Gabriel Bortoletto. I'm going to stick with it. I reckon we'll see something exciting happen. I'm looking forward to it. Podium. Timo, how are you going?
Keeping Oscar Piastri, and then I'm putting Charles Leclerc in second place and Max Verstappen in third. I think that just that feels right as well. It's all three go well. Leclerc's been on the podium, Verstappen's won here, Piastri won here last year. bit of chaos, but not too much. Enough to keep us entertained, why not?
Could be an interesting combination. I look forward to seeing how that sort of comes to fruition. I, meanwhile, am going to go for something completely different. I'm going to go for Piastri wins, Alonso second, and Hamilton comes third. I just have this sneaking suspicion it's going to be a bit of a jumbled one. And again, who loves a jumbled race?
The bridesmaid, but not the bride.
Yeah, who loves a jumbled race? It's Alonso and Hamilton. The guys that can work their way through a bit of confusion and chaos are the old hands. Piastri will be fine because he'll be at the front anyway, just sort of out the way of the chaos that forms.
It'll be that picture of the plane flying off into the distance whilst it's just calamities behind, but it's the smiley face plane just going, I'm fine, everything's fine.
Yeah. Or that one guy sitting eating some food in a fast food restaurant while a fight is breaking out behind him. That sort of affair. Meanwhile, when it comes to the fastest lap, you have gone for one of the Ferraris.
I've gone for Lewis Hamilton. I just feel like maybe... I just feel like he could do it. I was trying to buy into your narrative there and thinking with all the chaos, he just somehow puts in the fastest lap whilst he's at it. Or if we do get a little bit of rain or whatever, who knows, last minute, he just gets one in early and no one can beat it.
Yeah, I think Sunday's set to be dry, so I don't know about the rain statistic, but again, with a bit of chaos, with pit strategies sort of flip-flopping and potentially sort of some drivers opting to stay out through chaos, maybe he'll pit late onto a set of softs that he can absolutely rinse for a lap and get that fastest lap, even though it means nothing. I'm joining you on the idea that the Ferrari power units are going to be important here, because they certainly were at Monza, and we've got a similar aerodynamic and sort of straight-line speed set up here. So I'm going to go for Esteban Ocon in the Haas. Again, Ferrari power unit, they were quick at Monza.
I saw his name, and until you said Haas, I was still thinking he was with Alpine.
Alpine. Yeah.
I was so probably confused because... as to, where are you going with this? He's got a Renault engine. What are you on about?
No, but you're probably confused because Alpine did actually take time out of their day-to-day to wish Esteban a happy birthday, which is sort of like your ex getting back in touch and going, happy birthday. Yeah, well, they did. They put for something else. You get a joyeux anniversaire. I was like, oh, that's nice, I guess. But yeah, a bit of an odd one. One, happy birthday, Esteban Ocon, his birthday on the day of recording. He flew out to Baku with Nico Hülkenberg, Jack Doohan. I can't remember who else he shared a plane with. Lando Norris was there as well. So it was sort of like this weird assortment of drivers that were all lift sharing to Baku in their little private plane. And then brought him a cake as well, which was nice. And I just like to see the nice things they sometimes do for one another. So yeah, happy birthday, Esteban Ocon, and may you get fastest lap this weekend. Meanwhile, wild prediction. You're going for a Zandvoort repeat, sort of.
Yeah, sort of. I'm going for that a driver gets onto the podium for the first time this season. And it is wild because only 40% of the grid have made it onto the podium at least once this season. So stats are against me. Plenty of drivers to choose from, but the likelihood of it happening, slim. But it's Baku, so maybe not so slim. So
yeah, given we've seen some outliers appear on the podium before at Baku, it could happen again. Given the interesting outcomes we've had at a few races so far this season, Baku could produce another interesting outing. If I'm going to go for a wild prediction... Franco Colapinto, top six. It's wild.
I might guarantee him a contract for next year if you're not careful.
It might. Or it might, for some reason, guarantee Paul Aaron a contract next year. Who knows? We'll see what happens.
Very true.
But yeah, with that wild
prediction... helmet at the end of the race and it's Paul Aaron instead.
Sort of a Mission Impossible-style mask, yeah.
But it's a full helmet as well, underneath.
Yeah, it's also the helmet. He pulls off his helmet and, yeah, he pulls off a second helmet, which is actually Paul Aaron's helmet, and then it's Paul Aaron. Or there's, I don't know, there's some sort of combination where he pulls off a helmet, it's Franco Colapinto, pulls off Franco Colapinto's face, it's Paul Aaron's helmet, pulls off Paul Aaron's helmet, it's Paul Aaron. Boom, there we go.
You got there in the air.
Anyway. We got there in the end. We figured it out. It's a wild prediction. We'll see if it comes true this weekend at the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. That's all we've got time for. And of course, we'll be back for a review of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix next week. Hopefully, the internet will play ball with us next week because Timo's audio has already gone jumbly in my ears. It sounds like he's being eaten, but the video feed I'm getting suggests he isn't. Timo, Where can the people find you?
If you can hear me, then you can find me over on the Paddock Chronicle, where I have a very topical article on will we see a female driver in Formula 3 in 2026 and why there really isn't a reason for there not to be at least one. I've also got an interview out over on the Curbs tomorrow at time of recording with Carola Parodi, so go and check that out.
Some brilliant sounding articles there, and I look forward to that Formula 3 one as well. That sounds like it's going to be very interesting indeed. Obviously, they're going to be starting to form their paddock for 2026. If you want more of me, you can of course pick up the latest edition of Classic Car Weekly, which is our special edition for September, which has got plenty of coverage from the Goodwood Revival in it and a lot of my photography. You can of course also find me online as at Jesse on Cars on social media, on Instagram, Twitter and TikTok. And you can also find me in this week's edition of Motorcycle News. I've got Revival coverage in there too, some photographs of the motorcycle racing, so plenty of me to enjoy. Otherwise, enjoy the Azerbaijan Grand Prix this weekend, and we will be back with a review of all the action from Baku next week.